Hello and welcome to another exciting and jam-packed episode of Modern Day Philosophers. I am your host, Danny Lobel. Thank you for tuning in. I'm spending the week in New York City seeing my family doing some shows, which I'm putting up on Twitter if you want to come out and see me if you're in the area. And I'm here to be the best man at my buddy Tony Palladino's wedding, which means I get to give a speech. So maybe I'll have some audio from that, and maybe I'll record the speech and give you a little of that next week. My best man. I've never been a best man before, and I gotta tell you, I'm very excited about it. It's one of the things I always wanted to be. I've always been just a regular guy. But a best man, I have never gotten to be before, and I've always wanted to. So thank you, Tony, for that. This week's show is brought to you by StandUpCrap.com. Go check out StandUpCrap.com. Pick up my album, Some Kind of Comedian, and many other great albums at unbelievable discounted prices. They got Lewis Black, Marc Maron, Maria Bamford, and so many other greats that you've even heard on this show, and those that also that you haven't heard on the show. So go to StandUpCrap.com and check them out, Stand Up Records. And, of course, DrinkWell, the good people at DrinkWell who believe that the world is full of healthy people who like to have a little fun and drink some alcohol. And that's why they created the world's very first multivitamin for people who drink. As you know, when you drink, your body gets depleted of very essential and valuable vitamins and nutrients, and that's part of why you feel like crap the next day. Which is why DrinkWell is formulated to replenish lost nutrients, support healthy liver function, and process alcohol-induced toxins, and generally help you feel better the next day. And if you're skeptical, as always, I say go to Amazon and check out the reviews. It will deplete your skepticism. And if it doesn't work for you, which it will, because I've tried it and it worked for me, and I like the product a lot, and I'm happy to endorse it. But if for some reason it doesn't work for you, you feel it didn't work, you just email DrinkWell. They'll give you a complete refund. They'll include your shipping. You don't have to even send anything back. So it's a good deal. They're good, honest people. Go to drinkwell.com, DrinkWell with one L. That's drinkwell.com. Use promo code MDP and get 15% off. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. The product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. DrinkWell does not prevent intoxication, alcohol poisoning, alcohol abuse, or utter stupidity. Not a hangover cure, but it'll make you feel good. The next day, it's DrinkWell, folks. Go check out DrinkWell. And this show is also brought to you by a man whose music you've heard before on the program, based in Okayama, Japan, featuring the American hoodie monk Gomyo, a.k.a. Fat Boy Slim Dick, and the Japanese record producer and founder of Silent Smoke Records, Mr. Etc. Their first album, FBSD2, is now available on iTunes with two exclusive bonus tracks for everyone who buys the whole album. So don't pick and choose. Click Buy Album. You can find Mr. Etc. online at silentsmokerecords.tumblr.com and Gomyo at hoodiemonks.com. And go like FBSD at facebook.com/fatboyslimdick. And follow them at soundcloud.com/FBSD-2. And I'm going to play one of their songs 24/7 from the new album FBSD2, now available on iTunes at the end of the episode. So make sure you stick around for that. Damn, we got talented listeners. Hooded Monks in Japan are bringing you this show. All right, everybody. Without further ado, here we go. My talk with my good buddy, Adam Lustig. It's a fun one. Enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to Modern Day Philosophers.
Modern Day Philosophers.
Having failed to pay attention in school, Danny Lobel, now older and wiser, will attempt to learn basic philosophy 101. Our young hero will be joined by today's top comedians, philosophers all their own. Ladies and gentlemen, here's Danny Lobel.
Modern Day Philosophers.
I'm here with Adam Lustig. How are you?
I am thrilled to be here, Danny. Thank you for having me here at Lobel House Productions.
Thank you for coming to Lobel House Productions. As you can see, the studio is in full effect today.
It's amazing.
Gorgeous colors out the window. We've got reds and pinks and purples and blues as the sun sets over Southern California.
The very, very rare post-rain sky. It's gorgeous. The rain really brings out all the different hues.
The birds flapping their wings.
Yep.
Flying gently through the air on this beautiful Southern California evening.
That's right.
As we sit here in Lobel House Productions, gazing lazily out the window
at lyrical.
What will be another routine Monday evening.
The majesty of the sky contrasted only by the mundanity of the day-to-day.
Wow, that was so much better than mine. That was
no,
better.
Danny. No, you have
There's a stranger walking by. Hey!
Hey there.
Not friendly.
Okay.
Not
Happy friendly. Monday. Enjoy the majesty of the sky.
Not a friendly stranger.
No response from her.
Look at that guy crossing the street. Oh, you get all the views from up here in Lobel House. Look, he found something on the floor. It's a letter. He's picking it up.
Really?
Yeah. Did you see that? Now he's walking away. Is that your letter?
I think, yeah, it is.
Yeah, it is. Okay. Yeah,
it's his letter. It's his letter, guys.
Okay.
Well, it's his letter.
That's all the policing of the neighborhood we're going to do.
Okay. That's our show. Thanks for having me, Danny.
Oh, man.
Have a citizen's arrest. That's always been a concept that has really tickled me. Can you imagine actually trying to follow through on a citizen's arrest? First of all, is that a thing? Do you happen to know?
No, I don't think it's. I think it's just one of those things that they tell you to keep you calm.
I think so too.
You know, they're
trying
like
to keep people in check.
Yeah, like look, you have power.
Exactly.
You can make a citizen's arrest.
It's just the notion that anyone could arrest anyone at any time.
I made 3 citizens arrest today. I just left them there.
Exactly.
Just walk around with handcuffs. Citizens arrest.
Yeah. My friend Billy and I joked that the best response to a citizen's arrest is no. Someone tried to arrest you.
Nah.
Citizen's arrest. No. Okay. Seems red and impassive.
What if you citizen arrest back? Exactly. Citizens arrest back.
Citizens rearrest. No backsies.
For
no.
What? Yeah. On what grounds? On bad judgment of a citizen's arrest.
Exactly.
I say that your citizen's arrest was unjust. I arrest you for your arrest.
Exactly. Obstruction of citizen justice.
And that is how these two citizens wound up in Arrested Development.
Jeffrey Tambor. That would be fun. That would be a fun idea for a show, citizen cops. Just guys who go around making citizen's arrests, taking it upon themselves to clean up the streets.
All right. Let's do it tomorrow.
Done.
All right.
Citizen's arrest coming.
Let's make it. Film it. Put it out there.
Cut it.
Cancel it.
Yep.
And take it off the air.
That's it. That's the cycle of a show.
And then it's done.
We're in Hollywood now. We know the biz. We know the speak.
Skip right to the end and not do it.
No. That's pretty philosophical. Why is it worth doing it all? It's like the making your bed theory. Like the kid's like, I'm just going to get it all unmade. Why do I need to make my bed? It's going to get unmade.
You could apply that to your whole life and be like, I'm just going to die at the end. So I'm just not going to do anything and cut right to the chase.
That's right.
At the end, I'm not going to be doing anything. So why don't I just get ready for that now?
That's right. Sort of a pro-suicide nihilistic view of the world, I guess.
I guess like lazy people could just be the people who are best preparing themselves for death.
Exactly. I came into this world doing nothing. I'm going to die doing nothing.
I'm trying to ease my way into the coffin.
Exactly. Nice and easy.
Not going to fight nature.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Give me something to think about here on this Monday afternoon.
So I asked you for some information on yourself.
I gave you a few tidbits.
And I passed those tidbits on to Alex.
Cool.
And one of the things you said was that you went bald at 21.
Yeah, I started losing my hair pretty early on.
Which we thought was an interesting thing that you mentioned that, because it obviously had some significance to you then, that you would bring that up as a thing about you.
Yeah, I guess so. It just seems, I mean, I haven't looked at any of the stats, but it just seems psychologically early for one individual to start losing one's hair. I remember because I would always get a buzz cut. That was just like my go-to haircut was just a buzz cut. Uh-huh. I fancied myself a bit of an athlete, so it was sort of aerodynamic and made me feel cool on the basketball court, so I'd always get a buzz cut. Mm-hmm. And then I just remember one very, very specific time, home from college, maybe sophomore or junior year, I guess, and my mom took me to the barber shop, and my wonderfully gay barber, Luis, shaved my head, and then I just slowly started to realize that, like, you know, in the sort of male pattern baldness zone, it just wasn't really growing back,
and man. It
never has.
I thought it would be great if you had my wonderfully gay, because that's such a nice and, you know, politically correct way of saying
that
he's a wonderfully gay man, and then if you broke into like a stereotypical gay accent that was so offensive.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
My wonderfully gay barber Luis, who was like, hey Adam.
Exactly. I like to balance being PC and wildly un-PC in the same sentence. My descriptions are very thoughtful, but then my impersonations are incredibly rude. But yeah, I guess I did. And you know, my dad is bald and my mom has really thin hair. So I think, you know, it was never really in the cards for me.
From a bald family.
Bald family. We're the balds. It's like the stupids, but the balds. But I'm proud to be a young bald and I don't mind it. And I wear it with pride.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, but yeah, 21 felt a little early. But
when you were not disappointed?
No, I was able to shake it off pretty quick. There was like 3 months where I was like, why me? Like, what the heck? And I would like really obsess. And this is something I don't think I've really ever told anyone, but I would really obsess over other people's hairlines. You know, I would be on the New York City subway or something, and I would just like fixate on other people's hairlines and like how sort of sturdy and like thick rooted their hair looked at their hairlines.
That's interesting.
Yeah. That was like, but only a few months, and then I was past it. And
did
I was
you
like,
get caught?
No, not really. Not really. You know, on the subway, nobody knows what the hell's going on.
What are you looking at?
What are you looking at? Exactly. Louis, what are you doing here?
Louis.
Oh, there we go. Oh, man. Okay, cool. But no, it's not a source of embarrassment or shame or anything like that. So nor have I ever tried to do anything about it.
Why were you studying? Just to compare?
Yeah, I was just like, I guess I was fixated on it at the time. Was like, I was newly balding. So it was like, pardon the pun, on the top of my mind.
Yeah.
Top of my head. And I guess I was just sort of in that zone. But you know, here, when you're in show business, you're acting, you're going to these auditions, the bald thing can really honestly be, and maybe again I'm projecting or being a little hard on myself, but I really do think that it tends to be one of the first sort of things that people see, you know? It's like in that game Guess Who, there were like 3 bald characters, you know what I mean? And you knew that if it was like, are you bald?
It's a whole
different
world you're living in.
It's a whole different world. Larry David touches on it quite poignantly in Curb Your Enthusiasm, sort of the bald brotherhood, which I think is like slightly farcical, but also a little bit true. And I feel like I do feel a unity with other hair follically challenged men, especially young balds like myself.
Sometimes I see fat people, and I think to myself, I know what you're going through, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no unity.
No,
there's no unity because I think societally, I've thought about this a lot. Why is there so much hatred towards fat people?
Mm-hmm.
And I figured out that I think it's because people hate what their worst fears about themselves are.
Amen.
I think people are so afraid. Like maybe the same reason people hate on bald people is that they hate on fat people because they're like, that could happen to me.
Exactly.
And rather than face the reality that that's a possibility, I'm just going to be angry at it.
Exactly. I'm going to turn that fear into like subtle passive aggression.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like I'm going to just discriminate against. It's like get away from me, possible disease that can affect me.
That's right. Know? That's right. Obesity, male pattern baldness.
Right.
Any of those. Schizophrenia.
That makes people, uncomfortable with the condition of life.
That's right.
You know? Oh, that could happen to me. Like you see anybody who's like, who's fucked up in any way. And
yeah.
You're like, oh. Yeah, get that away from me.
And it's easy to poke fun, but I think you're totally right. It comes out of a really deep human fear that affliction, and again, affliction in quotes, could sort of befall you.
Right.
I think that is what it
get
is.
Get that out of my field of vision.
Exactly.
I don't want that to happen to me.
Exactly.
Don't make me think about that.
Exactly. Don't confront me with that part of the human condition that's not relevant to me, but could be. I'm scared.
Right.
Yeah, totally. So, but I wear it with pride now. I think, you know, aside from the practical sort of downsides of being bald out here in California. It's like you can get sunburned like that. You got to watch out for skin cancer. There's some practical sort of things you need to, navigate and maneuver.
Do you think it shapes who you are?
I like to think not, but perhaps.
Would you be a different guy with hair?
I wonder. I do wonder. It happened so rapidly that it was like I went from being hairful to hairless like nearly overnight, or it seemed like overnight, that I don't think it wasn't like a gradual thing where I slowly had to like deal with it. So I do think I would be the same dude. I'd like to think I would be the same guy.
So while we're talking about the baldness,
we're talking bald.
Alex decided to pair you up with a bald philosopher.
All right.
And that man's name was Aristotle.
Aristotle was bald?
Aristotle was in the bald brotherhood.
Get the hell out of here, man.
Aristotle. He speaks of the golden mean, meaning the virtuous path between two vices. For example, courage. If you don't have enough, then you're a coward. If you have too much, you're reckless.
Hmm.
To achieve this, you must make a habit of acting right and practice it over and over again. The biggest threat to our virtue is our own disinterest in practicing it.
Well, sure.
That connects what we were saying earlier about having negative attributes and trying to use them positively.
Exactly.
And it comes from a bald man.
Exactly. From the bald man. I would say Aristotle would be the bald man.
Yeah?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Come on. I mean, I got to tell you, I feel my chest is puffed out a little bit as a bald man learning that Aristotle was a bald man.
So
as
you
well.
Do get excited.
Heck yeah. I mean, I didn't realize how much until just this moment. I feel really proud.
It's good to have him on board.
Yeah. So that's interesting, though, the notion of connecting two vices through a line of virtue, a path of virtue connecting two vices together. That's cool. I mean, those Greeks, let me just say that they had it all figured out, Danny. Those ancient Greeks and Romans, those cultures, they knew exactly what was going on.
It's
like, we've got nothing on them. I do. I really do. I've been reading a little bit of that Carl Sagan book, Cosmos. Have you ever read that?
No.
It's interesting. It's about space. A lot of it is above my head because, again, I'm sort of, you know, I don't have a proclivity for science or things like that. But, you know, the ancient Greeks and the Romans, they were super into astronomy and science, and they had it all figured out. They figured out the curvature of the Earth, and, you know, they put all this information in the Library of Alexandria. And then when that was torched, that got destroyed. Mm-hmm. I mean, that set sort of, you know, human knowledge back thousands and thousands of years, plunged us into the Dark Ages. And it took us literally thousands of years until, like, Galileo and those guys to recover some of the knowledge that these guys, Aristotle and Socrates, they already knew all that stuff. I would venture a guess that we're still chasing knowledge that they already knew.
Damn, that library fire fucked us.
Sucked, dude.
Yeah.
Fucked us. Fucked us.
It's like just a fire. That library fire.
That library fire, yeah.
So you always need backup copies.
They didn't save it to a hard drive or anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit more about the book. What does it say?
Oh, gosh. I mean, that was sort of the idiot's guide to it. I just started it. That's honestly as much as I sort of lucidly understand. But just that, you know, these ancient, and when I think about, you know, because I study drama at school and you learn about the ancient Greeks and you study Aristophanes and obviously Aristotle and all these guys. And it just seems like they had the right idea about shit, man. They were hanging out. They had enough time to drink, party, go to theater, philosophize, have universities, schools.
They weren't running around doing dumb shit.
They're not barbarians, you know? It's like, we took it was a deep ravine. Those Middle Ages, that medieval times, that was a deep ravine in human history. It's like, we fell from some pretty great heights, being like those ancient Greek, Roman, and Egyptian cultures, which really seemed to be so, like, their thirst for knowledge seemed really unquenchable. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they built those pyramids, and they just sort of figured out these city-states in a way that it just seems to me that it would be like a Tuesday afternoon in ancient Athens, I would imagine would feel really similar to a Tuesday afternoon in contemporary Los Angeles. Hanging out, podcasting,
right,
talking about other bald men. You know, just like chit-chat, comedy, humor. They had that all. It's not like, you know.
Maybe we're coming back to it.
We're still talking. We're across the table in 2014 talking about Aristotle now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
With good reason, because they nailed
it. And a lot of us are just not, though. A lot of us are just living in the above-ground graveyard. I feel like we are our homes are like the little kiosks in the mall.
Mm-hmm.
And the mall is just the mall. Like, I'm just surrounded by stores.
Mm-hmm.
I leave here. There's a Target, there's a Lowe's. Mm-hmm. There's Starbucks. Mm-hmm. There's just every giant store. There's the Beverly Center Mall with a the mall. I started thinking about it as like a give us your money center.
Mm.
You know, it's like just a whole center where people can give
just
you their
money. Just dump your money right in here.
It's like they should just call it like welcome to the Give Us Your Money Center. Oh, if you'd like to park, you'll have to give us a little money for that.
Exactly.
Well, why would I park? Well, you give us a little money so that you could get in and give us some more money.
Give us a little more of your money.
Oh, okay. And then what? Well, then you go home and, you know, make more money and then come back and give it to us. Yeah. And then I started calling gas stations pay the prince centers because some prince in Saudi Arabia gets like a little money in his pocket every time I go get milk.
Pay that prince.
You know, so like I hit the gas. It's just I'm pay the prince.
Pay the prince.
It's just like I'm just like in a pay the prince, pay the prince, pay the prince. Oh, give me your money center. Give me your money center.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to give me your money center. Oh, I got to pay the prince. Got to pay the prince.
Yep.
It's like, why am I driving around my neighborhood paying some prince in Saudi Arabia just because I want to get milk?
Exactly. And that's globalization.
Yeah.
That's the world that we live in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just trapped in everybody's just trying to grab my money. But nobody's giving it to me. Everybody's holding on to the money. They're like, hey, you can't have this money. I need to pay the prince.
Exactly.
I need to pay the prince too.
That's right.
It's like I'm living under the prince's regime in America.
Mm-hmm.
This is not good.
Not good at all. No, it's feudalism, but we're being feuded upon from afar. These Saudi Arabian oil princes. What are we giving them our money for?
And
would you want to be one of those guys that really unplugged, disconnected, live off the land, go to the woods? Could you do that? Because that is the other... my mind.
That's because they try to scare you with that. But
yeah.
But that's just because they've made it unappealing.
Right.
You know, the Give Me Your Money centers have been like, you don't want to go away from the Give Me Your Money center.
Exactly. What about all our goods and services and things that we have?
What would you do in the woods? There's no Give Me Your Money center there.
Exactly.
It's like, oh, but could we just live off the grid? You can't live off the grid. Please. You're reliant upon us.
What are you going to do without your earbuds and your iPods?
You might be uncomfortable. That's it. Just comfort.
Comfort.
Is the little carrot on the stick that they're dangling. You're like, you want comfort?
That's right.
You want comfort?
That's
pay
right.
Pay the prince. Pay the
exactly.
prince.
Pay the
Come
prince.
Come to the Give Me Your Money Center.
Give Me Your Money Center. We have all the comfort in the world. Exactly. Just, you don't want to go out into the woods?
Just leave your Pay the Prince machine over here.
Yeah.
And pay us to leave it here. And then you can go in and give us some money.
Exactly.
And then, you know, and then they just trap you.
Yeah.
They just trap you into some kind of a... You know, plug you into some kind of system so that you're making money to give them the money.
That's right.
And then before you know it, you're dead. And you're like, wait a minute. When do I get to go do the life thing?
Yeah, what about the life? This was just an exchange of goods and services for money.
No, there are people that live life. You're here to facilitate them.
That's right.
They're living life. You don't. No.
That's right.
You don't do that.
You're not part of that. I always had an aversion to malls. Even when I was a kid, to this day, I'm such a terrible, clothes shopper, and I just have no patience for it. I'm so bad. And there was something about it, and I don't wear this with a badge of honor. I'm not proud of this. I'm a little ashamed, but I just had zero tolerance for department stores and Kids R Us's and Macy's. There was something about the perfume section and all the clothes and the music. I just had like, I would almost have a conniption fit anytime
That's
I would walk in the
mall. That's why I go crazy and I just mess with people when I go to these places.
Yeah.
Like, I got to make trouble. I have to burn this to the ground somehow.
A little trouble
know?
For yourself.
It's like I'm trapped in the system.
Exactly.
I'm trapped in the system.
You're trying to rage against that machine.
Yeah, I am. I'm gently raging.
Gently. I'm nudging the machine. Nudging against the machine.
Very Jewish.
Just nudging up.
Nudge
again.
Against the machine.
That's the Jewish Rage Against the Machine cover band. Nudging against the machine. Yeah, I hear you, Danny. I feel like you and I are of a very same philosophical ilk when it comes to Give Me Your Money centers.
Yeah.
We don't like them.
It's horrible.
Horrible. I couldn't agree more. So that's why it does make me long for a simpler time, ancient Greek, Aristotle's day, ancient Greece, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Where, again, you had the same sort of intellectual debate, but it was stripped of all the commercialism and the bells and whistles of, you know, contemporary 21st century society, which, like you said, I think very aptly, is almost literally a big mall. We live in this big mall with cops as mall security. They just didn't have that element of society intact. And it was almost the more fundamental hunter-gathering, acquire food, make food, consume food, and learn. And that's what it was also very Talmudic about, like those ancient Greeks. They just wanted to learn, and the Egyptians and the Romans. They're really into math and science in a way that we take for granted now, I guess, or again, we're standing on their shoulders in terms of the sort of knowledge that they've acquired and accrued over time, and we're just sort of taking it for granted completely. I know I do.
Yeah.
I don't know shit about science, Danny. Any new piece of scientific information that I read is a mind blower to me. That's how dumb I am when it comes to knowing how things actually work.
But at least you're interested.
I'm interested. You know? Yeah.
Actually, I think about like all the times that Jews have been killed in history, and it's happened for other people too, but right. I know the Jewish story more.
Hometown.
It's just, why did so many Jews give their lives for the Torah? I think about that a lot.
Yeah.
And what was it? It was stuff to learn. So it was knowledge.
Right.
It was their knowledge that was trying to be taken away from them. They're like,
right.
I'll die if you take away my knowledge. And now, like, people are just like, just take away my knowledge.
That's
I don't
right.
care. I'm dead already.
Right.
Like, it's, if you're not learning... It doesn't matter if it's a Torah or it's a Quran or whatever it is. It's your knowledge, and you're trying to learn it, and they're trying to... Literally, history is just a bunch of people trying to replace books with other books.
Amen.
They're like, hey, take this, read this book. It's just very aggressive book clubs.
Yeah.
You know?
Religions are just very aggressive book clubs. I think that's what religion is.
It is. That's history. It's just been like, hey, we're all in the middle of a really good book. Just leave us alone to read. And then a bunch of people come by and they're like, hey, you should read this. It's a new bestseller.
Exactly.
It's even called New Testament.
Exactly.
It's new. And you're like, I'm still reading the old one. I'm really enjoying it.
Out with the old, in with the new.
Fuck you, die. You know?
Exactly.
And then they're like, fight, murder. And then, and that's it.
Aggressive book clubs.
They're just, the world's just been a bunch of aggressive book clubs, which turned into a big shopping mall when everyone gave up. After a while, everyone's like, fuck the books. Okay, I'm tired of it.
I want a beanbag chair from Brookstone.
I'm tired of all the fighting over books. I quit the book club. You're like, oh, you quit the book club. Really?
That's what atheists have done. They've quit the book club.
Yeah. Then it's like, well, how about you just pay the prince?
Yeah, pay the prince. Go to the Giving Your Money Center. That's so funny. Yeah, I think you're right, Danny. I think you sort of are at the essence of it.
All right. Well, here's back to Aristotle. I'll tell you a little bit more about him.
Please do.
Aristotle, a Greek man, lived from 384 to 322 BCE.
Good.
He was a Greek philosopher born in Strigerius.
Okay.
Is that right?
I don't know. Strigerius sounds cool.
You know. If you know, you know. And if you don't know, now you know wrong.
Okay.
Northern Greece in 384 BCE. His father, Nicomachus.
Okay.
It's probably the Jewish way of saying it.
Yes. Nicomachus.
Okay. Died when Aristotle was a child.
Oh, that's too bad.
Whereafter he lived under a guardian's care.
Oh.
At 18, he joined Plato's Academy in Athens.
So sick.
Which was like probably like Professor X's. Like,
yeah, exactly.
You know?
How badass would that have been? I would love to join Plato's Academy in Athens, man. That's what I'm talking about. Like the first, exactly, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Like the first League of Geniuses.
Probably sucked not to get in. That's exactly. A rejection letter. Like,
bummer. On tablets. I'm sorry. You open your stone tablet.
Plato, we regret to inform you.
That's right.
Then, but, you know, there are plenty of other good choices.
Exactly. University of Phoenix Online is another good option.
He remained there until the age of 37. So that's like kind of like chilled out, you know?
Just 20 years hanging with Plato.
Yeah. His writings cover many subjects, including physics, biology, zoology, metaphysics, logic, ethics, aesthetics, poetry, theater, music, rhetoric, linguistics, politics, and government, and what to do with leather. No.
It could be a wallet. It could be a wrist thing. He knew all about the leather.
And constitute the first comprehensive system of Western philosophy. Shortly after Plato died, Aristotle left Athens and, at the request of Philip of Macedonia, tutored Alexander the Great between 356 and 323.
Amazing. To be the bridge from Plato to Alexander the Great. That's what we're talking about. That's one of the greatest bald men in history, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Great bald men in history continues.
Great balds. Great balds of ancient Greek.
And like, I feel like, you know, a bald eagle flies by over the...
exactly, with a toupee. Yeah.
The great balds of history.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing. What a life. I mean, just like to be able to sort of, you read that bio and just sort of like throw away the fact that he was like basically was his sort of thought and writings are the foundation of Western philosophy. All of it. Okay. I mean, that's what I'm talking about. It's like they were at the ground zero of thought, like ancient Greeks. Ground zero. It's crazy.
According to Encyclopedia Britannica, like according to them.
Yeah.
Aristotle was the first genuine scientist in history. Every scientist is in his debt. It's a little bit harsh.
It's a little extreme.
Okay.
Not everyone.
Britannica.
Bill Nye, even Bill Nye? I don't think so.
He owes him only like 35 cents.
Right? Yeah.
Royalties, right?
Exactly.
Teaching Alexander the Great gave Aristotle many opportunities and an abundance of supplies. He established a library in the Lyceum.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Is that right?
Lyceum? I don't know.
Lyceum?
Yeah.
Which aided in the production of many of his hundreds of books. The fact that Aristotle was a pupil of Plato contributed to his former views of Platonism. But following Plato's death, Aristotle immersed himself in empirical studies and shifted from Platonism to empiricism. He believed all people's concepts and all of their knowledge was ultimately based on perception. Aristotle's views on natural sciences represent the groundwork underlying many of his works.
Sure.
His ethics, though always influential, gained renewed interest with the modern advent of virtue ethics. All aspects of Aristotle's philosophy continue to be the object of active academic study today.
Sure.
Though Aristotle wrote many elegant treatises?
Treatises?
And dialogues, Cicero described his literary style as a river of gold.
Wow.
It is thought that only around a third of his original output has survived.
Wow.
Only a third.
Yeah. So who knows if we had those other two-thirds, what we would know now.
That's pretty good. That's a long time for it to survive.
That's
only
true.
A third of my work is around that long from now, I'll be happy.
That's right. That's like the first 15 minutes of this podcast.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's
that's all. I mean, that's unbelievable. I mean, wouldn't you want to be written about like that?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
It's just like, I know this is the worst analogy of all time, but it's like he was literally like the first. If Earth, the planet Earth, was a YouTube video, Aristotle was the first commenter. You know, he was just like the very, he had the first opinions about things. To be the first scientist.
Well, what about Plato? He came before.
Plato came first. Yeah. I guess I'm sort of...
He was one of the first commenters.
One of the first commenters. Second.
Yeah.
He was the first one to make a rude, offensive, racist comment, maybe.
He had the most likes, maybe.
Exactly. But, I mean, they... That's what just blows my mind about it, because we are standing and sort of building on all of their knowledge and studies and information. But they were building on none of that. They had to literally figure it all out for themselves. And they did, super successfully.
What bald role model did he have?
Exactly. He didn't have any. I mean, I don't know what Plato's hair situation was. He probably had a nice tight hairline just above the brows.
Yeah.
Thick, luscious, curly hair.
Ben Franklin, also bald, right?
Big time bald. Big time bald. He's one of the great balds.
That's a good bald.
In history, that's a really good bald. Yeah. Yeah. Stanley Tucci. I would say those are the big three.
Hmm.
Aristotle, Ben Franklin, Tucci. Those are the big three balds. Aristotle. Quickly becoming one of my personal heroes, even through this 12 minutes of chit-chat. I think that he's rocketed to the top of my list. But this is what I mean about them just like, you know, they would sit around at their salons and talk and just like sort of expound philosophically as I imagine. This is what I like to imagine the ancient Greek sort of life would be. And kick around these huge ideas, which at the time don't maybe seem like huge ideas, but are just like what is on their mind.
A lot of popping grapes throughout the conversation.
Exactly.
Sort of flicking them in your mouth like, you know what I think?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's right.
I think there is a oneness to the world, but hold on, pass me another grape.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm more hung up on this virtue vice thing.
Here, open your mouth. I'll throw one in there.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I also would love to know. It's like because the sort of the flip side of it is, you know, we like to imagine these ancient Greeks, Plato and Aristotle and Cicero, all these people having these like very profound and esoteric conversations. But what about the small talk? I'm sure there were a ton of town time.
That's the other two-thirds that didn't survive.
That's the two-thirds that didn't survive. He's like, so what's the deal with hair? Yeah. Fingers are weird.
Grass grows.
Exactly.
I mow it and it grows again.
Yeah. Ugh.
But hair.
Yeah.
Where?
Yeah.
Do you ever hear that George Carlin poem about hair?
No.
When he grew his hair long, he wrote a poem about
it. Did he?
Don't be scared. It's just my hair.
Yeah.
It's not weird. It's just a beard.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's so funny that long hair was a taboo. I guess it makes sense, but just like at the time, of course, you know, George Carlin was bopping.
Imagine if like hippies were bald. Like if you shaved your head, what if it was the opposite? If you wanted to be like...
Anti-establishment,
you... Well, people do shave their head bald, like skinheads.
Yeah.
Go fully bald.
It's a radical gesture.
It's an interesting thing about hair.
Yeah. Yeah, but the hair as political act.
Yeah.
Hair as political statement.
Political
hair. I'm going to grow my hair long against the establishment. Are you kidding me? Fuck that. I'm going to shave it all off against the establishment. It's like, well, I don't know if the establishment really had a strict policy on hair. But
and then you just see people who look crazy because they don't tend to their hair.
That's right. And that in itself is the purest act of rebellion, not to give a shit about what your hair looks
Remember
like.
Remember when Britney Spears shaved off her hair?
That was a huge thing. People went berserk.
Not her hair.
Exactly.
What are you talking about? Why would she do that to her hair?
That's right.
I feel like she could have cut her hand off. People would be like, well, you know, she's crazy.
They'd be less appalled.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Van Gogh cut off an ear. Not as big a statement.
Not a big of a deal.
Should have shaved his head.
That would have really got the girls' attention.
Monks shaved their heads, right?
And
in the monastery.
They look amazing.
Hare Krishnas.
My favorite thing about the Krishnas, though, and the monks, I guess sometimes, is that they leave the little patch in the back. Or is it in the front? I think it's in the back.
I think that's the Krishnas.
Is that the Krishnas that just leave the little patch? It's like, oh, it implies hair without sort of making it explicit. I do like that. If I could do that style, if I could rock that style, I would.
You could.
The Krishna?
Yeah.
I could go full Krishna?
If I were you, I would get an orange robe and I would show up in Venice Beach on a Thursday and get that free vegan buffet.
Yeah. Wait a minute. There's a free vegan buffet?
For Krishnas, yeah.
Say what?
I found out about it, yeah.
Because you patronized
it? I just try to keep my ear to the pavement.
Yeah.
You know.
About free buffets and stuff.
Yeah, I found out about it at Costco. You know, I talk to people. There's a free vegan buffet on Thursdays in Venice for the Hare Krishnas.
Please don't exclude me from that. Keep me in the loop and tell me when you're going down there.
It's free vegan food.
I'll take it.
That's great.
I'll take it. Lentils.
We both went to lentils.
Lentils is the first instinct for vegan food, I think. Or rice.
Because you know what? Lentils you can't just get anywhere. Right?
Can you not? What?
That's a huge biblical story. You know, give me the birthright. Do you know the...
No, tell me.
Jacob and Esau?
Oh, yes, of course I know
he
that.
He sells his birthright for lentil soup.
Oh, it's lentil? I knew it was
it's a lentil.
I
didn't realize it was lentil thought it was soup. Split pea?
I thought it may have been a tomato.
It was a
maybe
split
a bisque,
pea.
Maybe a lobster bisque or something. I don't know if it was
a lobster bisque.
A cream of mushroom or something. I don't know what they were dealing with back then.
It was a lentil soup.
Yeah.
That always really... I always thought to myself, there's got to be... Like, I don't have to give up anything to get lentil soup. This
little
guy
on a
gave
birthright.
Up his birthright, which is like... The biggest, one of the biggest stories
yes.
in history.
Yes.
It's in the Bible, which is in the Christian Bible, the Jewish Bible, and it's studied by the Muslims.
That's right. The story of Jacob and Esau is studied
yeah.
by them. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Great.
That's in there.
Yeah.
Everybody must be thinking to themselves, lentil soup.
Huh.
You know?
It carries a lot of weight.
There's got to be something to lentil soup.
Yeah.
If you really think about it.
Yeah.
And yet, you don't see it on the menu very much.
Right.
How often do you have a lentil soup?
I guess the other side of the argument would be that the Bible is portraying Esau as such a brute and kind of a dummy mm-hmm. that for him to sell or exchange his birthright for a lowly, shitty bowl of soup that isn't even a tomato bisque but is just a lentil soup would almost speak to how sort of foolhardy of a trade he made.
But
so maybe it's
was,
using lentil
they,
soup
they
pejoratively.
Said he was evil. They said he was evil and that he was a trickster, right?
Who, that Jacob was a trickster or Esau was?
Well, I guess they were both a trickster.
Jacob's a big...
He was a trickster, too.
Esau seems too dense. He seems to... He's too, I mean, you correct me if I'm wrong. You're much more sort of Talmudically inclined than I am, but he was sort of a big, hairy brute, right? That was like just a little aggro to me. He seems like a jock or like
yeah,
just like a
was.
Fucking rugby idiot.
Yeah, but I thought he was also... I think he also was supposedly clever.
Was he?
But, I mean, there has to be some... He couldn't have been an idiot. He couldn't have been a total idiot to go for... Yeah, all right, just give me the soup.
I'm just hungry right now.
I think there must be something more to lentil soup that
lentils
we don't know about.
Carry something spiritual. Well, and the Christians are onto it.
Yeah.
It does seem like a basic food.
You know, the whole Bible really is about food. I figured
it's a big
that
cookbook.
Out. Well,
Julia Child presents the Old Testament.
The first story is Adam and Eve in the garden, and they're told, don't eat that.
Yeah.
They basically...
I guess you're right.
It all comes down to food. They're like... Everything is dietary.
Right.
It's like, don't eat that. And then they eat it.
And that's...
And then because of that, mankind has to suffer forever. That's
one
the whole
little
story.
Dietary misstep.
Right. Don't eat that. And then there's the soup. It's like, should I eat that? Well, for the birthright, you could eat that.
Exactly.
Then there's famine in Egypt.
That's right.
Not enough food.
That's right.
It's all about food.
Yeah, well, as it should be, don't you think, Danny? I mean, this is... That's, you know... What else are we doing here? This is, I mean, it's food, water, shelter. It's like, this is what makes, quite literally makes the world go round, sustains the human race. It should be all about food.
Yeah.
I don't see how and everybody isn't all the time talking about food. Even more, people get a lot of gruff. It's like this foodie culture that we live in now, but I'm for it. I'm not even a foodie necessarily, and I have terrible taste in food. I'll eat whatever kind of garbage you throw in front of me, lentils or not. But I like the fact that, I mean, food should be on everyone's mind.
Maybe that's why another reason why people don't like fat people.
Right.
They go, oh, maybe he ate some forbidden food. Maybe it's his fault we're all doomed.
Exactly. He's
not the dietary. That's what we're supposed to be working on here.
Didn't he read the Old Testament?
The whole thing is about working on a diet.
Exactly. Exactly.
The whole Bible is just telling you, you know, be nutritionally conscious. Just
That's
make
it.
Good choices.
That's
of
right.
What you eat.
That's it.
You heathen.
Exactly. That's why people have a lot of hostility towards fat people, maybe.
This is secondary.
It's anti-biblical.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm glad that food comes up. It's also a very Jewish thing, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll always be talking about food. Everything centers around food. You know what? But that's also a little selfish of us Jews to claim. I love that we Jews claim food as ours. It's like, if it's food-related, that's a Jew. Food.
Well,
as though everyone doesn't eat food all the time and all cultures aren't centered around food always. But we Jews, we like to really pride ourselves on how sort of like food-based.
That's the
are.
Macro, but the micro comes down to like hummus,
mm-hmm.
right? Whose is that? Falafels. Whose is that? Is it Jews or the Arabs? That's a big fight.
Huge fight.
In the Middle East. That's what's at the center of the whole conflict.
It's the holy war right there. That's at the nature of it.
Who made baba ganoush?
Mm-hmm.
Was it the Jews or was it the Muslims?
I would love to know.
Well... If we had an answer for that, my friend, there would be peace in the world.
There wouldn't be so much bloodshed in the Middle East. Who made baba ganoush?
That's the whole fight. Jews are saying food is ours.
Yeah. And Arabs are like, well, are you kidding me? We've been eating food since the beginning of time as well.
Abraham.
Yeah. Exactly.
Lentil.
Yeah. Who lays claim to Baba Ganoush? I guess that really is what this whole horrible thousands year-long holy war has been about.
Yeah.
The right to the origin of Baba Ganoush. And
you know, hummus. You know what else I think about is spices.
Yeah.
The spice trade.
Yeah.
Formed human history, right?
Yeah.
People would give anything for spices.
Yeah.
People were sending ships to India. Get us some spices. This food is bland. And ultimately, I think England gave up. And they're like, we'll just eat it bland. But the rest, that was England's whole agenda.
Amazing.
It was like, the food here is very bland. If we can just send
spice
some people.
Spice it up a little bit.
Just a little bit, right? If you can get some spices from India.
Yeah.
And then they got there, like, and Columbus was like, he sets out from Spain. And,
right.
And they're like, we want the spices. And the English are like, bring us the spices, you know?
Yeah. It was all about spicening up that
Did
food.
Columbus leave from Spain? He left from Spain, right?
I think, Spain, King Ferdinand and Isabel, those are the, sort of the royalty that sent him off,
they
I think.
Killed all the Jews and sent him on a boat.
Seems like not a bad plan.
But then how is he connected to the New World, to England? I got to go back to the story of Columbus.
This is above my head, Danny. Once again, it's like...
Anyway, the whole point, the reason that they call the Native Americans... Indians,
right,
is because they were trying to go to India,
right,
because they were trying to get spices.
And
then if you ever go to an Indian restaurant, everybody just goes, it's too spicy. I don't know. I think I just wrote a Seinfeld joke.
I think, what's the deal?
And then you're trying to go there and the food's too spicy.
Exactly. But it is kind of amazing. You bring up a really interesting, profound point, I think, which is the kind of lengths to which human beings will go to improve their food.
Yeah.
They'll start wars.
They'll start war. It's just about reading and eating.
Reading and eating. It's not bad. That's not a bad way to live.
And that's what the Greeks were doing when they were throwing grapes in each other's mouth while they were... Hey, open up, Aristotle. I think I can get it in this time. It's been, 35... How many years you've been in this school?
Exactly.
We're just sitting around. There's got to be some afternoons where they're just throwing grapes.
Exactly.
All right. Close your eyes. No, I'm not going to hit you.
Yeah. Having any brilliant thoughts? Not today, honestly. All right, just open up.
One third of the work is lost, and it's just all, we ran out of grapes.
Exactly.
Today.
No more grapes, yeah.
You want to read a little bit of Aristotle's work?
I would love to. It would be my honor as a fellow Baldman.
Under where it says a paragraph.
Sure. So this is from the horse's mouth. This is from Aristotle.
This is Aristotle.
Okay. Yeah. It says, the wise man does not expose himself needlessly to danger, since there are few things for which he cares sufficiently. But he is willing, in great crises, to give even his life, knowing that under certain conditions, it is not worthwhile to live. This is also kind of what we were talking about,
mm-hmm.
About not even wanting to start life. If we're just going to end up in the ground, why even bother?
Right.
He is of a disposition to do men's service, though he is ashamed to have a service done to him. That's interesting.
Yeah, some of us are ashamed to have a service done.
Okay. To confer a kindness is a mark of superiority. To receive one is a mark of subordination. That's interesting. To give a kindness is a mark of superiority. To receive charity, basically, is humiliating or embarrassing. That's a little sort of, I don't know. There's some ego wrapped up in that makes me a little uncomfortable.
Right.
Some pride, some hubris, I think, to feel ashamed to receive charity or kindness. Why should you be ashamed to receive kindness from another person? Why do you always have to be the one administering the kindness?
Absolutely.
You should be able to get it on the backside.
You should be.
He does not take part in public displays. So there's a humility, modesty kind of thing that's being championed, I think. Mm-hmm. He is open in his dislikes and preferences. He talks and acts frankly, which is one of the things I respect about you, Danny.
Thank you.
Because of his contempt for men and things. Well, that was a sad ending to that sentence.
Yeah, things.
He
the men and things. Things.
Just running out of nouns.
Right.
The wise man is never fired with admiration, since there is nothing great in his eyes. He is not fond of talking. Well, I guess that counts us out. He is never fired. It is no concern of his that he should be praised, humble, or that others should be blamed. That's good.
Yeah.
He is his own best friend and takes delight in privacy.
Not a dog owner.
That's right. Exactly.
He's his own best friend.
He's his own puppy dog. And takes delight in privacy, whereas the man of no virtue or ability is his own worst enemy and is afraid of solitude. That's interesting. See, I see this as the sort of introvert versus extrovert sort of dichotomy, where it was always explained to me that an extrovert is somebody that sort of when they need to recharge or like get back to stasis, they need to be around other people. Whereas
right.
an introvert to sort of, unwind or like reduce anxiety needs to be alone. I feel like I am a textbook extrovert. If I have too much alone time, I start to go a little crazy and I start to feel sad. I need to connect and hug my fellow man.
Yeah.
But what do you think? Are you? Would you say you're an extro or an introvert?
I think
as far as verts go.
I think I'm both. I think, as my cousin once told me when he kind of came out.
Kinda?
Kind of came out to me. He said, he says, Danny, I want to tell you something. I like blokes. Okay. I mean, I like birds too, but I like blokes. So, what do you mean? You're saying you're gay? Right, no, I'm trying to tell you is I'm both, but I'm neither. More confusing than anything.
So that's where you stand on the vert issue. You're both an intro and an extrovert, and simultaneously neither an introvert.
I'm both, but I'm neither.
You're both, but I'm neither. I love that.
I was trying to make it comfortable, too. I'm like, no, I love you however you are.
Whatever, yeah.
No, listen to me very carefully. I've not told you that I'm gay. What I've told you is that I'm both, but I'm neither.
I think I love that. It's poetic.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous.
I guess on some level, we're all both, but neither.
Yeah, exactly.
Which means we're nothing. We are and we aren't.
That's right. And this is what we were talking about. I can't remember if it was when off or on mic. But that I think that it was that sort of sexual fluidity that probably was pervasive in Aristotle's time. That everyone's both and neither.
Off mic.
That was off mic.
Off
yeah.
mic.
Yeah, we were talking about just you know, whether we would want to sort of travel back in time to go to Aristotle's time and how there were sort of, I'm sure, less sexual taboos and less puritanical values placed on sex and less inhibitions and things like that. You know, Bacchanalia and everyone's having sex with everybody. That's the way we see ancient Greece.
And you theorize that that's a Judeo-Christian thing.
Well, yeah.
The
sex being equated to guilt and shame. I think that we can really thank the Judeo-Christian.
Certainly the ancient Greeks and Romans both.
I don't think they had a problem with
the body.
It. Yeah, exactly.
And its nude form.
That's right. And I think that, you know, they were both and neither.
They were both and neither.
Yeah. I think they were all probably both and neither.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is nice, which to me sounds a little bit like utopia.
Yeah.
I mean, there's sort of a utopian quality to that of like a total, you know, open sexual spectrum, no labels, no hetero, no homo, no trans, no this, no that, just both and neither.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're all both and neither. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
What are you on about?
Exactly. Well, good for your cousin. I think that's very poetic.
Yeah.
I like that very much, actually. Yeah. That's cool. I like that. But you are obviously so funny and warm as a person, but my girlfriend is the same way. Funny and warm, hilarious. But she, when she needs to when she's feeling stressed, she needs to be alone and just be quiet and alone in her room and just without me, I need to get the
hell
out of it.
Does it bother you?
No, of course
you're
not.
Okay.
Gosh.
With
it? Oh, obviously. Yeah.
No, because you mentioned that you don't like to be alone.
Oh yeah. I mean, of course, everything in moderation, you know, in spells.
Right.
But when I need to...
You put an oven timer on, you're like, all right, you have
a long
time
is
until...
Exactly, until this cake is done. And then we eat the cake.
Honey, we talked about moderation.
Yeah, we talked about moderation. No, but if I am too much in my own head, I get sad. If I'm too...
Why? What's making you sad?
I don't know what it is. I just feel like I can sort of go down some mental spirals if I don't have some literal external stimulus like other human beings.
What's a mental spiral that you've gone down?
What am I doing? God, I'm so worthless, man. I'm just my time's being wasted. Am I even good at anything? I don't know. I feel kind of weird. I'm just God, I'm so bored. I'm bored because I'm boring. That's what it is. Only boring people are bored. I guess I'm boring. Just that's it.
I've been on that mental spiral.
Oh, yeah. Off we go. And then the only thing that snaps...
It's like a mental spiral staircase. I might have just walked right past you, but my head was down.
Yeah, exactly.
I was just...
That's right.
So we both have that.
Yeah. And I think everybody does to some degree, and it's just a matter of, okay, how do you cope with it? The introvert copes with those mental spirals by being like, okay, I'm just going to read a book, sit here alone, and just just sort of bliss my way out of it. Mm-hmm. Whereas I literally require stimulus, people, friends, that I can take my attention off my own crazy mind.
But do you feel like
anything else?
Do you ever feel like, oh, that's maybe I should just deal with that shit?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I try to, because there's also if I just distract myself forever, maybe I'm not going to
confront my own darkness.
Yeah.
And then
move past it.
Yes.
There's got to be people who don't do it anymore, right? There's got to be people.
I
know at least that I'm better about it now than I used to be. I used to do it a lot more.
What's that, really beat yourself up and go down these shame spirals?
Yeah. I mean, it still happens, but right. it's less frequent, which makes me believe that it is possible to eliminate it completely.
Yeah.
But then, how do you grow if you have nothing to...
Yeah.
You can't... I guess you can't completely eliminate it because then you're stuck.
Yeah, but it's part of life. That's what I'm saying. It's not necessarily a bad thing to sort of have... Be riddled... Not riddled, to possess self-doubt. People who don't possess self-doubt, I find wildly suspicious. If you, if you are...
Exuding too much confidence?
No. Red flag. Big red flag.
Get away from me.
Yeah. Get your confident ass over there.
All right. Let's look at the quotes.
Okay, let's look at these Aristotle quotes here. Aristotle says, "We are what we repeatedly do. Excellence, then, is not an act, but a habit." I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. You have to, you are what you do. We are what we repeatedly do. That's true. I think about that all the time. I think about how it's like no matter what your philosophy is or what your thoughts or opinions are, your life is essentially comprised of what you do, the actions that you take. I can get on board with that.
Excellence is habit.
Like, excellence then isn't an act. What? It's a habit that you've established because like you've
established an excellent habit.
Yeah.
But that still separates excellence and habit.
Right. Does it? I see what you mean. You're saying the habit is still a habit. It could be a good habit done excellently.
Because it could also be a bad habit.
Done excellently. I'm an excellent cigarette smoker. That's my habit. I do it excellently. I'm a pro at it. That doesn't make it a good habit.
Excellence is still a descriptive of the habit.
That's right.
When he's saying...
That excellence is the habit.
Is a habit.
That's right. If you consistently act excellently... And execute excellence, then it will be your habit.
And my habits are, I leave clothes on the floor, I overeat, and I'm excellent.
And excellence. Excellent. Yeah. I like fly fishing and excellence. Those are my two habits.
Habits of mine.
Here's another quote. "For the things we have to learn before we can do them, we learn by doing them." For the things we have to learn before we can do them, we learn by doing them. Okay. Learn by doing, right?
For the things we have to learn before we do them, before we can do them, as in a skill that you, like,
right,
talking about fly fishing, you might need to learn a few things before you can go fly fishing effectively.
And what better way to learn those things you need to know than simply to jump right in and do the thing? Just go fly fishing, learn on the fly, trial by fire.
He's saying don't practice, just go for it.
Go for it. And that's the best practice is doing. I actually also subscribe to that philosophy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just do it. You want to know how to do something?
I'm with you.
Do it.
Yeah. I always just do that.
Just do the thing.
And then I fail. And people say you probably should have done some research and practice before you did that.
And then you're like, no. Have you heard of Aristotle? And they're like, yes. And you're like, okay, well.
The man who is his own best friend.
Exactly. Exactly.
Hey, Aristotle, what are you doing? I'm hanging out with my best friend.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah? Like that, like a Brian Regan. I'm hanging out with my best friend.
Yeah. That's a really good Brian Regan.
Oh, you mean you're hanging out alone again? No, I said I'm hanging out with my friend. I'm hanging out with my best friend.
Oh, Aristotle, you silly loner. Here's another quote. "I count him braver who overcomes his desires than him who conquers his enemies. For the hardest victory is over self."
That is true. I am always battling myself.
That's what we're saying, our own internal shame spirals. It's your own mind is your greatest asset and your most potential destructive enemy.
Yeah.
I think.
You're also your best friend and your worst enemy.
Exactly.
That's what he said in... Between the best quote friend and the paragraph.
That's right. Best friend, worst enemy is your mind. Yeah, absolutely. You are the only thing standing in your own way, which is another reason I think these guys who meditate, if you can like really make a habit of that, for instance, talking about excellent habits, you want to make a habit of that, you can clear your mind, be at peace with yourself, hopefully be in control of your own mind and your own thoughts.
Yeah.
Which is hard, isn't it?
It is
tough. For God's sake, it's tough.
And you know something? What I started doing is I started... logging everything I do every day.
Oh, interesting.
About
in a journal?
Month ago, in my iPhone.
On your phone.
And I did this because I was like, where is the time going? And am I making any progress?
Yes.
And I can't tell. So I started writing it all down. And it turns out the time is being wasted and I'm not making any progress.
But at least you know. But at least now
yeah.
you know.
Yeah. No, I mean, it is interesting because... Here, take a look at this. From Thursday, 2:27.
Okay. Do you want me to read this or no?
No. I'm just saying if you scroll down,
yeah.
I've got every day And every hour that I'm awake accounted for now.
Yeah.
Everything I've eaten, everything I've done, interesting conversations I've had, I've put notes in.
That's really good. I like this.
I'm really, truly unemployed, Adam. This is somebody who's got way too much time on their hands.
You try taking a nap on dog beds on the floor. That's just one little excerpt I'll read.
Oh, yeah. Petco.
Yeah, Petco. You try taking a nap on dog beds.
He made me get up.
Comfortable?
Yeah, it was too comfortable. I didn't want to get up.
Dogs have it better than us.
Yeah, I have a theory that dogs are from another planet. Okay? And time is different on those planets.
Okay.
So 12 to 15 years on their planet would be the equivalent of a week
here. Ah, okay.
And they work very hard.
Yes.
And they get a 1 week vacation on this planet. And one of the options is to come to Earth in one of these dog suits.
It's one of the vacation packages.
It's one of the vacation packages. And you can, you know, the different, like a pure breed suit is more expensive.
Naturally, than a mutt.
Than a mutt.
Yes.
So depending on what you can afford for this particular vacation option. And the reason is because the pure breed ones usually go to nicer homes.
Sure.
And basically, like, this is fantastic. There's this other planet where all you got to do is wear this suit. And they will massage you constantly.
They feed you.
And like their filet mignon are these little dog food belts. Like, they just give you bowls of filet mignon every day. No kidding. And yeah, and you can shit outside.
Yeah.
No way. Yeah, you can just shit outside. And they'll pick it up.
Yeah.
They'll pick it up. They'll pet you.
Yeah.
And it's just the greatest week.
Yeah.
But you got to be careful because there's some shady travel agents that'll send you in a bad package to, they have some province called China.
And then they'll just eat you. They eat you. And that ends terribly.
Some people don't come back.
That's right.
It's a risky vacation, but yeah, you know, it's one of those weird planets. You know?
If you hit it on the head, though, it's really a good time.
So you're telling me there are different parts of the planet where they will treat you like a king, and then another part of the same planet, they'll just knock you over the head and eat you? Yeah.
Yep. That's
it's a strange planet. They're not on board as a people.
Yeah.
They don't... They,
exactly.
They haven't...
We're not all coordinated here on Earth.
All right. So you really have to make sure you get the
It's more about the travel agent than it is about the planet.
Yeah.
That's funny.
But it can be a really fun week.
Yeah. Oh, okay. A week. I love that it's a week, too.
Yeah.
That to us, it's a whole dog's lifetime, 15 years. It's
right.
It makes sense. Makes sense. Can I read this last quote from Aristotle, which
yeah,
I think is nice and summarizing?
Let's do it.
His bonus quote, it says, philosophy can make people sick. Well, how about that?
Really?
Yeah. Philosophy can make people sick. You know what else makes people sick? Germs. Forget it.
I love it. Oh, man. Adam, it's so great.
Danny, this is the best, man. Thank you for having me over at Low Bell House Productions.
Thank you for coming back.
It was my pleasure.
Low Bell House Productions.
But yeah. Danny, I appreciate you having me on, man. I'm really a big fan of the podcast and of you in general.
And I'm a big fan of you in general.
Mutual Admiration Society. Yeah.
Thanks for doing it. We should do more stuff.
Let's do it.
I'd love to do more.
Okay, deal.
Okay, great.
All right, Danny.
See you in a few months.
See ya, bye.
Everybody, that's the show. I want to thank you for tuning in. Thank you to Adam Lustig. Thank you to Drinkwell. Thank you to Stand Up Records for sponsoring the show. You can donate to the show at moderndayphilosophers.net. I just redesigned the website, so check it out if you haven't seen it yet. And if you make a donation of $20 or more, I will send you some complimentary Tweaked Audio earbuds. Compliments of the good folks at tweakedaudio.com. So do that. Support the show. So you can write me at thecomical@yahoo.com. It's always very exciting when I get an email from a fan. I love it. I write back all the time. You can check me out on the most recent episode of The Partially Examined Life, which is another philosophy podcast. The good people over there were kind enough to have me on. I mean, these are real philosophy whizzes, so you should check it out. They're really funny guys, too. And I'm honored to have been on their show. So check that out. That is The Partially Examined Life, and we talk about Moses Maimonides in depth, and I think you'll enjoy it. Other than that, iTunes, 5 stars, nice rating. Come on, help me out. Do it, please. And now, we're going to end off the episode with the new track, 24/7, from Fatboy Slim Dick. Hope you enjoy it, and I'll see you next week. Thanks. Bye.
Wake up at 5 a.m. and I can't get to sleep again. So I go out and have a smoke and have a drink and then plug into the matrix to connect with all the sana and help them clear their heads, eliminating drama. Fuck Obama for his policies of spying on the people to protect them from themselves. Everyone is equal. Is this the sequel to the land of the free and the home of the brave as we roam in a cage of our own making? We get freedom away and claim they're taking liberties with our liberties. Excuse me, please, as I seize. But they don't have to take what's given. You don't have to see the prison. Close your eyes, believe the lies. They ask for votes, you give them. What's in a name? A game is a game. A rose by any other name smells the same. And if you notice, you're insane. Or so they say. Heaven. Sleep is for the weak, Sativa was given by the sun. We are one, having fun 24-7. めぐる地球は回る。いつもの調子で外したハメでハプニング。ワクワク必要悪党師またしのぎ削り当てるバカどもそろって集めぎ話し。それならスカーフェストにモンタナ。アルパチのパチモンもどきはモンパラストリートで肩で担ぎって降りんのギャンスだ。どうも使い様せやかっこいいの沖の毒にどうか頼むから急いで。どうぞ行ってくれ。お時の国現実と一の枠なら俺のきつい状況にカングリ。 いつものブーツに隠したパケをよこで尻目に確認。おまわりパスシャフリーソグッデーずっと決まりっぱなしらいき。おかわりするパフパス片付け無幕多分エネミー。けど魂しくて閉じくるだったあれドラッグディーラーは配信。わざとらしくアドバラ。何時の臨時は異端児。せかせか しすぎて息急ぐ残念極まりね。チャンキー紛らわしくてマジ迷惑なあのいつかのピンチ。 24-7 24-7 Like water from a tap, the rhymes are always dropping from my lips as I spit. Sometimes I can't even believe the shit that comes out my mouth. When I start to flow, you can ask where I come from, but I don't know. I just let it go, it does what it do. A little present just for you, so just let it through. Don't fight the feeling, mind just reeling on the ceiling as you're dealing with expanding consciousness. This is who you are, and there is only this. Stick a minute to contemplate. Quit trying to obfuscate what's in front of your eyes. Don't believe the lies, just cut your ties and integrate with higher consciousness and being universal. Right now is all you have and there is no rehearsal for reversal. Maybe necessary now and then as you begin to recognize the path you're on, the place you're in. Keep moving, don't stop, stands through the hands of time. Tick tock, 24-7, knock knock, who's there? That's the question.